Did that gospel sound familiar to you? It should have. We hear this story of Jesus' temptations every year, always on the first Sunday of Lent. You would think that with all the other gospel stories to choose from, we might get a little variety. And yet the church is convinced that there is something so critically important about this episode in Jesus' life that it's worth listening to year after year. Why exactly is it so important? It can't simply be the moral of the story that Jesus wrestled with and resisted temptation, and therefore you and I ought to do the same. The temptations that Jesus confronted hardly resemble the temptations that beset you and me. After all, when was the last time you were tempted to turn a stone into a loaf of bread? No, our temptations tend to be more commonplace, like the temptation to harshly put someone in their place instead of practicing patience, or the temptation to indulge in some secret weakness because, after all, it doesn't hurt anybody, or the temptation to be less generous or loving or available because people don't appreciate the effort anyway. We might characterize these temptations of ours as temptations with a small t. Jesus' temptations, on the other hand, were capital T temptations. They were not simply seductions into a particular kind of unsavory behavior. Rather, they were tests of self-control to determine what kind of person, what kind of Messiah Jesus was going to be. And that's why the church serves up this gospel precisely at this time every year. Because during these 6 weeks of Lent, you and I are challenged to wrestle with these very same questions. What kind of person do I want to be? What kind of Christian do I intend to be? How resolute am I in my determination to be a faithful disciple? So with those questions in mind, let's go back and examine one of Jesus' temptations more carefully. The devil begins his trilogy of temptations with the one that seems to be the most urgent and, at the same time, the most benign. If you are the Son of God, command this stone to become a loaf of bread. It's the most urgent of the temptations because Jesus had already been fasting for 40 days and was ravenously hungry. It's the most benign of the temptations because it seems so harmless. In fact, it seems a stretch to call it a temptation at all. After all, if Jesus intends to go out and heal the sick and raise the dead, he certainly needs to keep up his strength, doesn't he? It's the most benign of the temptations in another sense also, because the devil does not demand anything evil in return. He doesn't require, for example, that Jesus fall down and worship him or anything like that. He simply lures Jesus with the tantalizing illusion of a loaf of bread and with the suggestion that he satisfy his hunger by misusing his miraculous powers. As I said, this temptation has to do with the kind of person that Jesus wants to be, how he will live out his vocation as Messiah. If Jesus capitulates to the devil here at the outset by placing his own needs first, well then, he becomes just one more self-serving swindler in the religion business. So, this apparently trifling decision about a stone, whether or not to turn it into food, has the potential to become either a stepping stone for Jesus to follow God's will, or a stumbling block to trip him up. And what Jesus decides has enormous consequences for you and me. If Jesus truly wants to live as the Son of God, his life must be focused on others, not on himself. On the one hand, he has to listen to God. On the other, he has to practice compassion toward other people. He cannot simply exploit his powers for his own gratification. If Jesus compromises his mission here at the beginning, it will almost certainly be easier to make a second compromise later, and then a third and a fourth. And finally, when the time comes for him to face that ultimate ordeal, his crucifixion on Calvary, the string of compromises will make that painful sacrifice of the cross well nigh impossible. So you see, what appears to be a simple, straightforward temptation turns out to be a pretty profound dilemma. It turns out that the devil is more clever than he first appears. But enough about Jesus. What about you and me? The real question for us this morning ought to be, how did the devil get me to make my first compromise? How did the devil begin to undermine my decision to be upright, honest, and loving? Well, it was probably a different story for each one of us, but you can be sure that, however it began, it was similar to the devil's opening gambit with Jesus, a trivial, innocuous accommodation where we slipped into prioritizing our own need above everyone else's, an innocent, be good to yourself for once kind of temptation. And once we were suckered in that first time, it became easier to accept the next compromise, the next surrender to self-centeredness and less concern for others. Here at the beginning of Lent, we find ourselves confronted by the same questions that Jesus faced. What kind of person do I really want to be? What kind of disciple do I intend to become? And the more we ponder these questions, the more we discover that, like Jesus, we don't just make those choices in the momentous turning points of our life, like what kind of spouse should I marry, or what kind of job should I accept, or must I really forgive this person who has hurt me so deeply? Rather, the pattern of our choices is established incrementally by the insignificant, almost unconscious decisions we make day in and day out. What kind of spouse am I going to be today? What kind of student will I be tomorrow? How will I behave behind the steering wheel as I drive home from Mass? What will I wear? How much will I eat or drink? It's these nitty-gritty decisions that either strengthen or undermine our choice to be faithful followers of Jesus. These 6 weeks of Lent afford us the opportunity to slow down and to reflect a bit on whether the choices we make are forming us into the kind of person we truly want to be.